So thank you everybody for joining over Zoom and tuning in. Tonight we continue our shiur on tefillah. because we completed much of the regular cycle of the year, we are moving on to other topics in tefillah. And most recently we have been discussing the paitanim and the era of the piyut, or Hebrew liturgical poetry in English. And Hebrew liturgical poetry, as we have seen, began in Eretz Yisrael. It began in ancient Israel. And we are going to go through the history of the piyut, not just century by century or region by region, but we're going to look at it in the context of personalities. We're going to look person by person, every major paitan, throughout the generations, and hopefully that'll be a successful way to get a picture of all the various eras of piyut, the different styles of piyut, and the different forms, techniques, and mechanics which make up the piyut team, which we are aware of, that are used in the tefillah. So, last week we discussed the first of the known paitanim, whose name was Yossi ben Yossi. And Yossi ben Yossi is a person we didn't know much about. We still don't know much about, but we do know that he represents the earliest generation of piyut in the history of piyut. This is because most of his piyut is devoid of rhyme. It doesn't have any meter. It doesn't use any name acrostics. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't have his name spelled out inside the piyut. The language is very simple, eloquent Hebrew, and it most closely resembles the forms of prayer written by the scholars of the Talmud, the Chachmei Talmud themselves. It is almost like a post-Talmudic first stab at the writing of liturgical poetry. And the most famous of those poems that he wrote would be the Avodah of Yom Kippur, which is called Ata Konanta. And ironically, we saw last week that the Ata Konanta, which is famous, is actually not his. It's misattributed to him. And the Ata Konanta, which he wrote, was in use until a few hundred years ago when it fell into disuse. Tonight we're going to explore another early poet, a poet who lived after the era of Yanai. And the name of this poet would be Yanai. One second, let me just mute over here. Okay, I'm going to mute. The name of this poet, Yanai, is... we're going to explore this poet who was once upon a time world famous, but then became totally obscure through no fault of his own. And it's a fascinating, almost detective story, so to speak, as to discover who was this person, Yanai, and exactly what happened to him, what happened to his piyut team, why was he once so famous, why did he disappear into the mystery of history. So, incredibly enough, the research into who Yanai was began almost 200 years ago. There was a Rav by the name of Rav Shlomo Yehuda Rappaport, who was the Rav of Prague. And anybody who's familiar with Svarim will know that his father was the Avnei Meluim. He was researching and investigating the life of Rabbi Elazar HaKalir, one of the most important paitanim who we're going to discuss next week. And in his research of Rabbi Elazar HaKalir, he found a surprising teshuvah, a surprising respondum from Rabbeinu Gershom. This is in the Shiboli Haleket, in number Chafchet. They asked Rabbeinu Gershom about the validity of saying piyutim during davening. And let me just share with you his words here. I'm going to show it on the screen. And he says, he mentions all the earlier scholars who did write piyutim. And I believe here he's quoting Rav Natronai Gaon. And he says, V'gam yesh lanu lilmod min ha-paitanim harishanim. And we could also learn a lesson from the early paitanim, shayu chachamim gedolim, who were great scholars, harei Rabbi Yanai shahaya min ha-chachamim harishanim, Rabbi Yanai, who was from the early Chachamim, Upayet Krovot Kol Seder V'Seder, and who wrote a poetry for every single Seder, meaning every single Parsha, Shilakol Shana, for the whole Parsha, V'gam Rabbi Lazar HaKalir Men HaChachamim Rishonim Upayet Krovot Kol Regalim, and also wrote Krovot for all of the holidays, etc., etc. So, when he saw this Teshuvah, Rabbi Rappaport asked, who is this Yanai person? He had never heard of him. He's like, who is this? Did he write any other piyutim? And in his biography of Kalir, he expressed surprise that he had never heard of this Paitan Yanai. Maybe somebody in the Sfaradi world had heard of this Paitan, but he definitely had never ever heard of him. So soon after, two other researchers, Rabbi Yomtiv, Reb, whatever, Leopold Zunz and Shmuel David Lozado, were two other researchers of Tefillah, who sometimes were on his good side, sometimes were on his bad side with Rabbi Rappaport, because they were less religious as far as what's the word, research into Judaism went. They were on the left, the far left side of the Wissenschaft movement. But they soon began to discover and investigate this person named Yanai. And they found two other things. They found two piyutim that they believed belonged to Yanai. One of them they believed was his because it had an acrostic, Yud-Yud, which is the spelling in Eretz Yisrael for the name Yanai. And second of all, the Az Rov Nisim, right? The piyut, which is very famously printed in many Haggadot Shel Pesach in Nirtzah, called Az Rov Nisim Alayla. That piyut, in an ancient manuscript, they found it written that this was written by Yanai. Let me see if I could cite for you the exact language. It says, Azov Nisim Yasad Rabbi Yanai Raboshel Rabbi Elazar HaKalir. This was written by Yanai, the teacher of Rabbi Elazar HaKalir. So soon after, they found yet another clue as to who Yanai might be. They found a manuscript with the writings of Rav Ephraim Mibon. The Rav Ephraim of Bon was one of the Balei Tosafot, or one of the early scholars who's well known for the story of Nisana Tokef, which is misattributed to Rav Amram today. But he also says two things. He says, first of all, and I'll read to you the language in Hebrew. He says, V'amar ha'olam. And the Welt says, as we say in Yiddish, right? Shehu yisod Rabbi Yanai, Rabo shel Rabbi Elazar HaKalir. That this, he was talking about a piyut. That this was written by Rabbi Yanai, the master of Rabbi Elazar HaKalir. Avabal kol eretz Lombardia en obnim oto. And in the Lombardy region of Italy, we don't say any of Yanai's piyutim. Why? Ki omrim alav, they say about him, this interesting story. Shenitkane b'Rabbi Elazar tamido. He became so jealous of Elazar, his Rabbi Elazar HaKalir, his student, who had surpassed him, he threw a scorpion in his shoe and killed him. So Rav Ephraim Mibon himself doesn't seem to want to believe this strange and absurd story. So he says, may God forgive anyone who might say this about Rabbi Yanai if he has never done such a thing. So the truth is, most intelligent people never assume that this story was real. Would you imagine that somebody of the caliber of Rabbi Yanai, who wrote the piyutim that Rabbi Yanai could write, as we're going to soon see, these caliber of piyutim, would anybody believe such a weird story that he threw a scorpion into Elazar HaKalir's shoe and killed him? That's so absurd. So most likely it's some sort of a lost idiom, like some figure of speak or language to say that he tripped him up or they had some unpleasantness between them, because there's just no way that anyone, that this could actually be taken literally. In order to really understand how these things could happen, you just have to look at your own language and then think about how some of the idioms in your language might not be understood 500 years from now. If 500 years from now somebody finds a writing from you where you say that I wanted to talk to my brother on Purim, but I couldn't because he was stoned. If you hear that, you're going to say, stoned? What do you mean he was stoned? Somebody killed him? But if you understood English, you would know that stoned is another way of saying that the person got dead drunk. So you could see that certain idioms of unpleasantness might have transferred over to other languages, and they're just not understood anymore in different languages many many hundreds of years later. And Ismar Elbogen pointed out that in Italy at the time, there were other, the same rumor about the scorpion and the shoe was circulating about other local poets between, against each other and between each other. So it's, you have to take this story with a grain of salt. It seems to be some sort of Italian expression that has no bearing on reality. The truth is, however, regardless of whether or not this story is true, it definitely hurt his standing. It hurt his standing among the Ashkenaz community, because once this rumor was spread, you can't really take it back. Once the genie's out of the bottle, people spread this story, and Rabbi Yanai was seen disfavorably among the Ashkenaz communities. Regardless, this information established Rabbi Yanai as an earlier poet than Rabbi Elazar HaKalir. Because up until then, everyone had believed that Rabbi Elazar HaKalir was the first of the Paitanim. Like the Ramban in Melchamot actually calls Rabbi Elazar HaKalir, like Rosh HaPaitanim, the first of the Paitanim. But from here it was clear that Rabbi Yanai was his teacher, and Rabbi Yanai was earlier than Rabbi Elazar HaKalir, either by one generation or by many generations. Later, so originally people believed Elazar was the first. Now we have a new discovery in the early 1800s, from 1829 till like the 1850s and 60s. We have this new discovery that there's somebody earlier, some mysterious person called Yanai, and we only had in the early 19th century, they only had about two piyutim to ascribe to him. Later in the 19th century, another researcher found two more locations where this Rabbi Yanai HaPaitan was mentioned. The first is in the Hakdama, the introduction to one of the books of Rabbi Sadia Gaon called Sefer HaYigron, the Sefer HaAgron. Rabbi Sadia Gaon wrote a sort of dictionary, and in the Hakdama, the introduction to this dictionary, which is probably written by either his Talmud or by him, Rabbi Sadia Gaon mentions the Rosh HaPaitanim. This is again in Arabic, so I'm going to read to you, perhaps, let's see if there's a Hebrew. There wasn't a Hebrew translation at the time, but he says, let me read to you, yeah, he says that I can support with evidence from the words of the ancient poets like Yezi Bar Yossi, Yanai, Elazar, Yeshua, and Pinchas. So we mentioned this last week, that Rav Sadia Gaon mentions all of these five Paitanim as being the earliest, biggest Paitanim that he draws from. The second place is from a Karai, whose name was Al-Kirkasani. He was writing a book. I don't remember the name of the book. Let me see. It's called, his name was Abu Yusuf Yaqub Al-Kirkasani. He wrote a chapter in a book called Hamagid. Let me see. It's also mentioned in Zichron of Sadia. And he mentions also over there, he also mentions the name of Yanai, and he says that the founder of the Karai sect of Judaism, I'm sorry, what? Got distracted for a second. He says that Anan, who was the founder of the sect of the Karaim, he would draw halachic rulings from studying the piyutim of Yanai. So you see already somebody in the, these are already very early 9th and 8th century 9th and 8th century attributions to people who had studied the piyutim of Yanai. So that means he must have been earlier than the 9th and the 8th century if he is being quoted by people in that era, and they already think that he's one of the early Paitanim. And we discussed the dating last week. So this is another interesting clue as far as this detective hunt went for who Yanai HaPaitan was. Then came 1896, and famously the Cairo Geniza was opened and found, and much of the material there was transferred to various universities, especially Cambridge. And in that wealth of new data, the first manuscript that was brought to attention that belonged to Rabbi Elazar HaKalir, that belonged to the Paitan of Yossi ben Yossi, was actually something called a palimpsest. So a palimpsest is a document. In the olden days, paper was very expensive. So sometimes, instead of finding new paper
and writing on the fresh paper, people would slightly wear out the writing behind it and write on top of it. That's called a palimpsest. And there was a palimpsest brought to Cambridge University. And two researchers, Dr. Birkin and Dr. Taylor, who were Gentile researchers, found this paper, this palimpsest, and they were super excited by this palimpsest. Why? They were excited because in the faded writing behind the Hebrew, there was this Greek translation of the Old Testament, this of the Tanakh. I think it was in Malachim. It was a Greek translation of Achillas Hager, right? Achilla was one of the first translators of Tanakh. And they were so fascinated by this find because they were Gentiles, and you know the Christian original translators spoke very highly of the translation of the Targum of Achillas. So they were very excited by this palimpsest, and they were able to get some of the language of Achilla and figure out how he translated the Bible into Greek. They were very excited. However, the Hebrew on top of it, they didn't pay much attention to. I'm going to show you a picture here. If I share my screen, let me show you a picture of this actual document. Anybody who's interested can go to the Jewishencyclopedia.com and you can see, just type in Aquila, like A-Q-U-I-L-A, and they have an image of this document. So here is the document in question. As you can see, you could still read the Greek behind the Hebrew, but it's completely covered in Hebrew. So a researcher named Yisrael Davidson looked at this document and immediately realized that these were piyutim. And upon analyzing the piyutim, he came to the conclusion that these were the piyutim of Yanai. More so, with this and other fragments, he realized that these were not just any piyutim. These were part of something called the Chizanat Yanai. And I didn't go into it in depth before, but Kirkisani, the Karai, he mentions that Anan quotes halacha from the Chizanat Yanai. What are the Chizanat Yanai? So the Chizanah, as we said last week, was the name for the piyutim that they gave for piyutim that were written for government evasion. And there were also lists in the Geniza which showed a book called Chizanat Yanai as a list of one of the books. So it would seem that there was an entire machzor called Machzor Yanai, which had been lost to time. And it was sometimes called Machzor Yanai, sometimes called Chizanat Yanai, and he believed that he had found at least eight poems. Yisrael Davidson believed he found at least eight poems belonging to Rabbi Yanai HaPaitan. And it was a very, very important discovery. We're going to discuss the idea of Chizanan in a few more minutes. Now, most importantly, what Yisrael Davidson did was incredibly impressive. He found about roughly eight to ten different poems belonging, or fragments of poems belonging to, that he believed belonged to Yanai HaPaitan, and he found attributions in it with attributions to Yanai HaPaitan. And he reconstructed not just the text of the piyutim that he found, but he reconstructed the form of the krova that Yanai had built. And he understood what the technique that Yanai used was to structure his piyutim that were called a krova and that were called a shivata. And he discovered that they are divisible by a nine-part system. Almost every krova he wrote was divided into nine parts, which is a mix of halacha, Agadah, acrostics, alphabetic acrostics, an acrostic with his name, Pesukim. It's a very elaborate system, but it's consistent. Every krova he writes, which we'll discuss in a minute, every krova has nine parts. Very amazing thing. Now, all the researchers agreed that, based on Rabbeinu Gershom, that he had written far more piyutim. Because Rabbeinu Gershom, we just saw in that tshuva earlier, Rabbeinu Gershom said that he wrote piyutim for every seder. Now think about that. For every seder, what does that mean if you're Rabbeinu Gershom? The Paitanim lived in Eretz Yisrael. And in Eretz Yisrael, we all know It's commonly known that in Eretz Yisrael they didn't follow the yearly cycle of Parshiot the way we do, which was the Minhag Bavel. They didn't read 52 Parshiot a year. They read 155 different Sedarim over 3 years. They had a different triennial cycle to reading the Parasha. So if Yana HaPaitan was from Eretz Yisrael, which from all the internal and external evidence seems definite, then when it says the Kol Seder V'Seder, that meant he must have written over 155 piyutim at least, just for the Parshiot. Forget about the Regalim. Forget about all the holidays. So even though they had 8 of them, there were so many piyutim missing that they knew there was more to find. So in the early 20th century, there was a young researcher by the name of Menachem Zulai, who quickly became like a tremendous star in the realm of the research into ancient Hebrew and to Hebrew liturgical poetry. He grew up in Eretz Yisrael, moved to Berlin, moved to Germany to work with Salomon Schechter and Salomon Shokin. And then when he finally moved back to Eretz Yisrael, he became fascinated with Yanai the Paitan, and he launched into a full-scale investigation and research into the Piyutim of Yanai. And his fascination with this Yanai HaPaitan led to some extraordinary results, because he wrote an article in, the name of the journal is Yediot HaMachon LeChekar HaShira HaEvrit, right? The Institute for Research in Hebrew Poetry. This was begun in the early 20th century. He wrote an article there called Mechkere Yanai HaPaitan, and meaning research into studies into Yanai. sorry, one second. studies into Yanai the Paitan. And he managed to understand some very important things about the Piyutim of Yanai. And those important things were, first of all, the language and the style of Yanai. He pointed to very deliberate words and forms that Yanai would use. Very deliberate language, very deliberate types of acrostics. And the way that Yanai, he was able to reconstruct the markers for what kind of piyut was written by Yanai. And he approached the problem of discovering these other 155 kerovos, so to speak. He approached this problem with an amazing amount of motivation and patience. Because what he did was that he looked through thousands of manuscripts to find what he believed would be Piyutim of Yanai. Now, one of the major problems to finding all these Piyutim of Yanai was that a krova, as we're going to see soon, is not a normal piyut. A krova is a piyut written to introduce the Shmona Esrei, the first three brachot of Shmona Esrei. So a krova is really a set of piyutim. And in the Yanai system, it's a set of at least 9 piyutim. So sometimes people would say, you know what? I like piyut 7. Let me read it in the Haggadah Shel Pesach. And so the piyutim were extracted from the krovot, and therefore they became popular elsewhere, but they became completely forgotten from their original source and which krova they were in. So you can imagine the amount of work he had to put into to look through thousands and thousands of piyutim to study them and to figure out which ones were written by Yanai, and this is not just piyutim in the Cairo Geniza, but from all over the world, and to decide which ones were definitely from Yanai, which krova they belonged to, and for which parsha. So he took the triennial cycle, the 155 parshiot that they read in the Minhag Eretz Yisrael. He took those pesukim, right, chapter by chapter, which chapters were read by which, looked at the pesukim and the topics, and figured out a 9-part krova for, and not just for 155, he did this for 177 krovot. 155 of them were written for the parshiot, the other 22 were written for the regalim, for the holidays, and for other events. It's absolutely astonishing work of research, which has borne fruit for the next 100 years at least. It's an unbelievable amount of research that Menachem Zulai did. He published a book called Piyutei Yanai, I believe it was in 1938. It's not in print anymore, but you could buy them used, or you can get it for free on HebrewBooks.com. And he goes through all of the piyutim that he consolidated from the Piyutei Yanai. So actually, it was 177 krovot, over 800 piyutim. So now his work established Yanai is not just one of the most prolific poets, but obviously one of the most famous. If you take the Cairo Geniza for an example, why would they have at minimum hundreds of fragments of the Piyutei Yanai if they weren't in use in the Cairo, in the Batei Knesiot, in the synagogues of Cairo? They must have been in use at a time. So this also begs the question, if he was so famous and so prolific and so many people used and read from his krovot, then why in the world would he have been forgotten? So we pointed to one possibility. One possibility is perhaps the scorpion story hurt his reputation and everyone stopped saying his piyutim. The other possibility is that the fact that the triennial cycle, that the three-year series of reading the Torah fell out of use, led to its elimination. And simply because people were no longer reading the Torah in three-year cycles, the interest in his krovos fell out of interest. The last record we have of people using the three-year cycle is from the 12th century. There's a I believe it's a teshuvah where someone mentions that in the 12th century in Cairo, the Batei Knesiot had some people. I think it was in Shibbolei Halakhet or somewhere similar that he mentions that they are still doing the three-year cycle. But since then, it's been a very long time since anyone's been doing that, and that's probably why his piyutim were lost to history. So 200 years later, after literally from 1829 until today, with almost 200 years of research, there's been a lot of work done since then to reassemble and to study all of the piyutim of Yanai. So Tzvi Meir Rabinovich published a book of Pirushim. Nachmeir Brasnik published a book of Pirushim. There's been a lot of work since then to study the piyutim of Yanai with more, you know, with a lot more respect and a lot more of attention as it deserves. So before I let you all go, this is an interesting story of the unraveling of the history of Yanai, but I just wanted to leave you all with some of the features of the piyutim of Yanai so that we could better understand who he was as a poet. First of all, he was the first to explicitly use acrostics for the name. So there's this feature of Hebrew poetry where a lot of poets will use the stanzas to print out their name. The first letter of every stanza will have their name. This wasn't used by the Arabs until hundreds of years later. And this is really early, in that Yanai will do this in most of his krovot. He'll sign his name in almost every single krova. He will sign his name Yud 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 Nun Yud Yud, which is the Eretz Yisrael way of spelling the name Yanai. And furthermore, he would use a ton of alphabetic acrostics. He would, you know, the first would be Aleph through Lamed, and then you go from a Mem all the way to Tuf. He did that a lot, but different from the Spanish poets, he didn't have, because it was earlier, he didn't have meter. So some of the sentences are longer, some of them are shorter. Doesn't exactly have a fixed syllable length in the way that the Arab style poems were written a lot later. So therefore, you'll find that his things will rhyme or they'll have a certain matching stresses, but they're not going to have a meter in the sense of the later style of the Spanish Paitanim. This was called Al-Kutab by the later Paitanim, who didn't really view this as true artistic poetry. They saw this more as like primitive poetry. So, as I mentioned earlier, he is the first person we know of to pioneer this format called a krova. And the Ashkenazim call it krovos, right? Kuf reish vav vez tzadi. And nobody really knows where the word comes from. We looked at a midrash last week where the midrash actually uses the word krova. So I mentioned that I mentioned that Rabbi Elazar ben Rav Shimon was identified by some as Rabbi Elazar HaKalir, most likely by mistake. But if you look in the actual language of the Midrash, it says Baal Mikra, Baal Mishnah, Darshanu Paitan. But the earlier versions of it say Krivai Upaitanai, that he was a Krivai and a Paitanai. So some researchers assume that this comes from a Greek word, which is the same word as Darshan, and it was later translated into Hebrew. And therefore, the word Krova comes from the original Greek word for Drasha. Others, like the Abu Dirham, believe that it perhaps comes from the word of Mikarev, like to come close, that the Chazan is coming close to the Bima. That's definitely another possibility. And then there's the suggestion that it stands for Kol Rina Vishua Be'ohole Tzadikim. Okay, another interesting theory. But what's important to realize is that in none of the manuscripts of Yanahai Paitan does it ever call it a Krova. Most often it will call it a Kiddushta or a Shivata. The reason for this is because those are earlier Aramaic terms for specific types of krova. If you look at a krova that was written for Shabbat morning, it would be called a kiddushta. If you look at a krova written for any other tefillah, like musaf, mincha, arvit, yom tov, it would be called a shivata. Now, why is that? It's very simple. The minhag of Eretz Yisrael was that they would only say a Kiddusha on the Shachrit of Shabbat and a Shachrit of Yom Tov. They would almost never, maybe Yom Kippur was an exception, but they would almost never say the Kiddusha in Chazarat HaShatz by any other tefillah during the week besides Shabbat Shachrit. The entire week, no Kiddusha, only Shabbat Shachrit. And therefore, a Krova that was written for the Chazarat HaShatz of Shachrit Shabbat was called a Kiddushta because it accompanied the Kiddusha. Any other tefillah of Shabbat or Yom Tov that had seven brachot, such as Mincha, Musaf, Mincha, Arvit, or Ne'ilah, those would have something called a Shivata, which is a sevenfold krova for that Shmona Esrei. We know that he wrote all forms. Yanai himself wrote Kiddushtot, Shivatot. It's clear that he wrote for perhaps for every single holiday, for every single parasha. Now, I mentioned that it is related to the word darshan. There's something very unique about the poetry of Yanai. That is that unlike Kalir, a lot of his poetry is very didactic in nature, and that word means that it's there to teach. If you could compare the poetry of Rabbi Elazar HaKalir to Yanai's, you could say that Rabbi Elazar HaKalir is like poetic midrash, while Yanai is like a poetic pesikta. It's almost like a poetic sifrei, a midrash of halacha. He's poetically trying to teach you what happens in the parasha and what halachot we could learn from the parasha. Now, make no mistake, he very often speaks about Agadah, and sometimes the only topic possible is Agadah. But very often, his poetry is very didactic in nature. This might have contributed to the popularity of Kalir, since Kalir was so much more often writing about Agadah and the interesting midrashic stuff. Most likely, his piyutim retained their interest longer than the poetry of Yanai. Now, because of this feature that it's so didactic, this emboldens some researchers to believe that this theory that we spoke about last week, about the origin, or 2 weeks ago, about the origins of the piyut, was because of government evasion. So there's this theory, based on a few sources that we mentioned 2 weeks ago, there's this theory that there was a time of oppression, there was a time where there was some sort of decree, perhaps the Justinian decree of 533, where the Jews were not allowed to give a drasha or a sermon in public. And for that reason, instead of giving a sermon, instead of giving a drasha, they would give a poem, they would give a song out loud, and they would encrypt into these songs different halachot so that they could teach with the songs. And then if the police would come, they would say, no, we're just singing our songs, there's nothing happening, don't worry about it. So this would seem to be further, a further evidence that Rabbi Yanai HaPaitan was actually a chazan who said chizana, and these chizana were substitute poems for the actual drashot, the actual sermons themselves, and you know, this was the entire origin of the body of poetry. Personally, I'm skeptical that the entire origin of this body of poetry was just because of government evasion. I don't like a crypto conspiracy theory. It doesn't really make much sense to me. I don't know what kind of police force would be stupid enough to really fall for such kind of tricks. Like, you're going to have a chazan who's clearly the greatest scholar in the community getting up and singing a song every week. Someone's going to catch on. I don't really see this loophole as something so believable. But again, this is it does conform to the evidence. The evidence does support this theory. So, I can't completely contradict it. Now, as far as his influence, so he had all these ideas. We had all these innovations. He innovated the krova, not a lazar kalir as previously thought. He innovated acrostics. He innovated, to a degree, he innovated using cryptic language. As far as his influence goes, I am not a precise or experienced scholar of poetry in any means, but those who are have claimed that virtually none of the later Paitanim have ever taken influence from Yanai. And it's not clear why. It could be they didn't have enough of his piyutim, and it could be because Elazar HaKalir just developed Yanai's style so much more and borrowed from the Krovash structure that they saw it much more fitting to borrow Kalir's style of piyutim than it was to borrow Yanai's. So the only real student or influenced or person of it who was influenced by Yanai would have been Kalir, because he developed the structure built by Yanai into something which was far more, adopted and attractive to the masses. For some reason, that's for some unknown reason, Rabbi Elazar HaKalir's style became much more popular and much, much longer lasting. We have many, many, many more piyutim today which are still said in shul that were written by Rabbi Elazar HaKalir than we do of Yanai. And it might just be because of the student and master kind of thing, where the student kind of overtook his master in improving and creating something greater than what was earlier. Now, just to end off, I'm sorry for anybody who's not following on Zoom. I'm going to show on the screen here some of the piyutim of Yanai to give you an idea of what type of poet he was. So let's begin with a very fun, let's begin with the piyut which I said many people might be familiar with, which is the piyut of Az Rov Nisim Hafleta Balaila. So this piyut is a piyut which is said in the Haggadah Shel Pesach in Nirtza. I'm going to open up Safaria here in the Haggadah Shel Pesach, right? You said, L'shana haba b'yushlaim habinuya, right? Everyone says that at the end of Haggadah Shel Pesach. And here's one of the first piyutim. Uvchein v'hi b'chatzi ha-layla. And thus, it says in the Pasuk, v'hi b'chatzi ha-layla, az rov nisim hifleita b'layla, b'rosh ha-shmoret zeh ha-layla, ger tzedek, Nitzachto kinechlak lo laila, vahi bachatzi halaila. I don't know if there's a song to this today, but this is a piyut of Yanai. And the question I have for you is, where does this come from? We know that he never wrote any piyutim that we're aware of that wasn't a krova. So it wasn't until many years later, even though this was part of the Haggadah Shel Pesach for thousands of years, it wasn't until very recently that it was reconstructed and realized that this was a piyut from one of the krovot of Yanai HaPaitan. And specifically, Uvechein, there's a certain section in his nine-part system where it always begins with Uvechein, and then it goes into an alphabetic acrostic where you have Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalid, right? It goes here, Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalid. It goes through that whole alphabet. But the style of this section of his krova is very simple. This is called in Greek anadiplosis, where you take the last word of a verse, like halayla, and then you continue every single verse after that with the word before, with the word from the verse before it. I'm kind of stretching this here, because anadiplosis is really where, like, you do Baruch Avod Hashem mimikomo hu yifen barachamav, or Yimloch, what's the word? Kadosh, 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 Shem Sefakot, Melocha Laretz, Kivodo, 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 Malei Olam, where you follow the word with the other word. But he's basically taking this word and he's using it as a keyword for the rest of this acrostic poem. Now, if we take a little trip here to Piyutei Yanai by Menachem Zulai, you'll see number Mem Aleph. This is for Seder Mem Aleph. This is for the Pesukim in Shemot Perek Yud Bet, Pasuk Chavtet, which speaks about the plagues of Dever. And this is the Seder that they would read, Seder number 41, in the poetry of in the triennial cycle of Eretz Yisrael. So if you want to follow along, just go to HebrewBooks.com, look at the Piyutei Yanai page, Pechet 88, and you'll see that he begins, and Menachem Zulai lists every one of the nine parts of every krova with a number. Here's Aleph. You see One Bitakta Hen. It goes Aleph through Lamed. The first paragraph is always three blocks of rhymes, right? You have three, and they go from Aleph. They use an acrostic Aleph through Lamed, and you see here that he uses a very simple Hebrew, like Hen Rega Yamutu Dibarta. Not very simple, but a little bit cryptic. Here, in a moment, they died from your speech. You Geonam Badever Hidbarta, and their might with a plague. You spoke away, Zoro Atzar Bivchorav Shavarta, and with your arm, you Zoro Atzar, I believe, I'm not sure what that means, in their Bechor, right, the Makat Bechorot, you broke Chatzot Laila Shamavata, and there at midnight, you passed over. Now, then at the end of section A, it says Kakatuv, and then he brings Pesukim. Vinemar, Vinemar, he brings all the Pesukim in the Seder of that week. And then you end Baruch Atash, you end with a little ending poem, Biado Viamin Tismachenu, Minegav Tishasakenu, Ubitzel, Meginech Atinonenu. So he returns to the word Magen, and then you follow Baruch Atah Hashem, Magen Avraham. And that's how you end the Chazarat Hashatz of the first bracha of Shmona Esrei. So that's the first part of the Krova. Let's go to the second part. This is the first one was called the Magen. The second part is called Mechayeh. Part Bet is called Mechayeh. So you have Meitim. After you get Atagibor L'Olam Hashem, Mechayeh Meitim Atav Hoshim Uri Datal, and then you begin the Piyut. Meitim B'chol Bayit Binof. What do you realize here? You realize that it's also an alphabetic acrostic. He's just going from Mem all the way to Tav. And this system he uses in every single one of the krovot. And then he says, Kakatuv, Vinamar, Vinamar. He brings all the different pesukim. And again, a little three-part poem to return to the idea of Yeshua and Triat HaMeitim, Baruch Atah Hashem, Mechayeh HaMeitim. Then you have part three over here, which goes into the Kedusha itself. And he speaks about Biyat HaMashiach. You have a short poem talking about Biyat HaMashiach. And you could see that he's from Eretz Yisrael. One of the clues is that he is always speaking about the Christian oppressors. And this would be before the year 635 when the Arabs took over Eretz Yisrael. So he's always mentioning and hoping for the demise of the Christian oppressors that controlled Eretz Yisrael in the Byzantine period before the Arabs conquered the land which is today known, the land area with Eretz Yisrael inside of it. And then again, he finishes this with Pesukim, then he goes into the Kedusha, Yimloch Hashem la'olam elokeach tzion dover dar haluka, and he has Ve'ata Kadosh and Kelna. These two are rubrics. This is called, a rubric is a feature where you have a heading and it signifies that you're supposed to say something else. So this is really a heading to show you, if you're familiar with the Nusach of Eretz Yisrael, to say this part of the Kedusha and to say a tefillah called Kelna Ta'arot, Toarot, I think it was, which is completely extinct, but it's a tefillah which is older than Yanai, which was said during the Kedusha in Eretz Yisrael. If anyone's interested, I'm sure Ezra Fleischer has more. Ezra Fleischer, who's a scholar of Eretz Yisrael tefillah from the early times, probably has more information about that tefillah. And then he goes a little further on to circle back to the word kadosh. He does another short piyut. This is always section Dalid. This is the fourth part where he goes into the kadosh section of his piyut, and he circles back to the word kadosh and kelna, and he has section 5 here, which is going to be an acrostic for the Biyat HaMashiach, and then he continues. So after you're done with the Kiddushah, he continues with two or three more poems. The next one is Uvechein Vahi Bachatzia Laila. This is the famous one from Haggadah Shel Pesach. So he says, Uvechein Vahi Bachatzia Laila, because we just read this Pasuk, Vahi Bachatzia Laila, he does an Aleph Beit poem all the way down following the word Halaila. Then another Uvechein, another poem, which begins, I think this one is not acrostically done, but it just follows the Pesukim of Laila and goes all the way back to the last one, which returns to the Kadosh. And, oh, it seems that he finishes the Kedusha over here. And we're missing some of the, appears that Zulai did not have some of the words in the end of section Tet. Okay, beautiful. So this was basically the structure that you're going to find in all of the Piyutim of Yana. It's a 9-part structure. I really wish, if it's difficult to do this over a recording or over Zoom and to capture people's attention for long enough, there's really a limit to how much deep poetic analysis we could do in one night. But this is a great starting point for anybody who's interested in the Piyutim of Yanai to look at all the halakha he writes and all of the midrashim he brings and to understand what a complete giant he was in midrash, a giant in Talmud. He brings from Talmud Bavli, Talmud Yerushalmi, every midrash possible. It's absolutely beautiful. And you could even cycle further here. You'll find many more Piyutim that are very, very interesting. So I thank everybody for their patience throughout this this little exploration here. And Bezrat Hashem, next week we will continue with our exploration of the most famous of all the early Paitanim, Rabbi Elazar HaKalir himself. I don't know if we could do it in a one-part series. Maybe we will. And Bezrat Hashem, we will continue on this series next week. So thank you, everybody, and I hope to see you again next week. So let's...